Andre, let's start with current situation of the conflict in Ukraine in terms of casualties. It seems that they're losing 2,000 soldiers per day. And how do you find right now the situation of the Ukrainian army?
First, they lose more than 2,000. Today's count was 2,225. And again, keep in mind that Russian Defense Ministry, these are numbers of Russian Defense Ministry, is extremely stingy and conservative. Just to give you an example, it doesn't count soldiers which have been killed when the APCs, tanks, and all kinds of the armored vehicles are destroyed. They just simply do not count it. They count them as the unit of the armor, but that's about it. They don't count those people. And so when you look at this, we're looking more again on the order of 3,000 at least a day. So basically, Russian armed forces wipe out a whole brigade in size-wise from the order of battle of armed forces of Ukraine. So they continue to resist, but as even the reports from the front line go, and now we have the assessments. And the assessments not only about the manpower, but about its quality and actually performance of other weapon systems. The issue is Ukrainian armed forces are no good in defending in the open spaces, obviously. The only thing they know is they hunker down in those dugouts, those trenches, and basically wait. Of course, they still able to shoot at Russians, and this is not like Russians do not lose people. They do, but their kill ratio is horrendous there in favor of Russia. And so that's the only thing they do. They essentially brought into their trenches, and then they get obliterated, killed. And today, even Lieutenant General Semyonov, the first deputy commander of the airspace forces of Russia, he came out with the assessment, for example, of the NATO air defense. Like he said, I quote, I did the video today on that. Patriot Pack 3 cannot even defend itself. Forget about defending something else. And so this is a really a pathetic situation. So for now, they will continue to throw whatever is left. Russians don't care. They will continue to kill, as much as it sounds horrible, until their whatever is left of their fighting spirit is completely broken down and they have no resources. So 14 brigades Zelensky promised for this new counteroffensive, which will be a suicide. So multiply it roughly by 3,000. This is the size of the Ukrainian brigade, so 42,000. So you have a Army Corps size trying to operate on the one operational axis against overwhelming firepower. So yeah, they may try to do so-called counter-offensive. They will be killed. So, and who knows? I mean, they may endure for another a few months, maybe, depending on the amount of drugs being shot at them and given. And yeah, there are still very many people who hate Russians. I mean, come on, they defend Ukraine against those, orcs from the Mordor, so yeah.
Do we know what's going on right now between Zelensky and Sersky? It seems that there are some disagreements between them. It seems that Zelensky wants to replace him. How do you find what's the main reason, in your opinion, of these growing problems between Sersky and Zelensky?
From what I know, I'm obviously not privy to those inner workings of his circle, but from what I judge is finally Zelensky started to get actual numbers, and actual situation on the front. The guy, first, don't forget who he is. He's a comics, he's stand-up comic, and he's the guy who used his penis to play piano. So that's about the level of his military expertise. So yeah, he worries about his own well-being, albeit he will may change Sirs, remove Sirsky. Who else is gonna go there? They all are people who formed their large formation command and control views, primarily from NATO, despite the fact that Sirsky graduated famous Moscow Combined Arms Officer College, you know. But again, he was a young lieutenant at that time. The most of those people, they don't know how to fight the modern war. They know how to prosecute it. And obviously, those people who run them, don't forget, Sirsky is still run by people like Agutta and all those people, US and French and whatever the generals sitting in the Rammstein. And from wherever else they control them, there is a command and control center there. So American generals don't know what real war is. So, and as a result, yeah, you can change Sirsky, get the best, whatever, the most popular general from Pentagon, get him in there. Result will be absolutely the same, you know. So.
Yeah, there were reports that they're sending troops to the border of Belarus. And do we know why they're doing this? What's the reason behind this?
Well, I mean, the main reason about this is PR, to create the visibility that, you know, or impression that they really know what they do. They cannot, you know, conduct massive operations. In reality, yeah, they're going to accumulate forces. The appropriate parts of the Belarusian military are on high alert right now. So, but generally, it's going to be nothing more than provocation primarily, you know, if they even decide to do something. And again, don't forget, there is a division size force of Russian troops there, you know. So, and when you put this together, they still don't have enough what is called force, Ukrainians, to conduct any kind of the serious large-scale operations anymore. They can produce some kind of attack and skirmish, probably the most is battalion size, you know, but primarily they sit in their trenches nowadays.
Yeah. There are reports that the United States allocated $2.3 billion to Ukraine, that which means that they're gonna send 3 to 4 Patriot batteries. And what does it mean for the current phase of the conflict, Andrei?
Well, they will be destroyed. As I already stated, Mr. Semyonov, who is the deputy commander of the airspace forces, stated PAC-3 cannot defend itself. Forget about defending anything else. So sure, they will put it somewhere in the middle of the urban buildings, you know, in the city. This is what they usually do, including, for example, launching primarily all kinds of attackers and things like that. They move into some, apartment complex of the buildings and put them, because they hide behind their backs primarily of civilians. This is what evidently NATO militaries are very good at. And they launch from there. Then in PAC-3, it's going to be, they will look for some kind of the classic air defense ambush tactics, you know, like to shoot down something, you know, so, and then immediately turn off radar. And because once it operates for any even extended, I mean, in minutes on time. Just to give you example, if you have, for example, something like Su-35 there with Kh-31, which is the anti-radiation missile, it doesn't matter if it even you get one swipe, you know, from the electronic ray. It already gets the position, and you can turn off radar. It doesn't not going to help you. You know, it knows where you are, and it's going to attack even the turned off radar. So it's not going to change anything at all. So it's just more destruction of the Patriots, which have been completely discredited as the viable air defense system.
Jake Sullivan was talking about that the United States together, NATO, gonna improve air defense system in Ukraine before NATO summit. And do we know how they're gonna do that?
Jake Sullivan has no clue how to do it because he is political so-called scientist. That means he doesn't have any viable education, and his only experience with anything is that he was running the campaign of Hillary Clinton. We know how. So this guy won't understand basics of the radar. Forget about the networking of the systems and how, you know, for example, redesignation, redistribution of the targets happens. And so, yeah, he can Yeah, sure. Why don't he send, laser, rays and, liquid vacuum or Star Trek type things there? So he has no clue. And again, you have to understand, it's not only Jake Sullivan. American military generally has no clue about air defense. When you look attentively at what they call air defense, it's pathetic, really, because they don't understand significance of it. They don't understand how it factors properly into the strategic and operational consideration. So, and again, yeah, it's funny, So, yeah, they can send 10 Patriots, wouldn't make any difference. They will be eventually destroyed, all of them, So you cannot defend with the NATO weapons on the modern 21st century battlefield, serious battlefield. For Iraq, maybe. And even there, it's just questionable.
Yeah. Andre, there are reports in RT, they're talking about that Kiev was supplied with chemical and radioactive weapons in order to do some sort of false flag operation. How serious is that in your opinion?
Well, they've been trying to do this for a while, actually. It's nothing new. As I already stated, the only real operations they can do at this stage, anybody, including the United States, are primarily false flag. So, and yeah, if it needs to be there, some kind of chemical weapon, it's a playbook which is so, I mean, how to put it, it's beaten to death playbook, okay? This is the extent of their expertise, and this is all about PR effect, primarily, like, oh, Russians use the weapons of mass destruction, things of this nature. So, yeah, they already tried to use all kinds of their like picrine acid and things like that, even in some sectors. Nothing new, again, nothing new. False flag. Okay, let's do something. You saw what was happening in Iraq. You saw what was happening in Syria with all those flags. That is the extent of their competences.
Yeah. The other thing that was so amazing hearing that Zelensky was asking the West to send them money to pay the military industrial complex in Ukraine to produce weapons for them. And do we know how does it work in Ukraine? And they're not producing for the country. That's why they have to buy some sort of material from outside. How does it work in your opinion?
Oh, it doesn't work at all. There is virtually nothing left there, what used to be a fairly advanced industrial and military industrial base. What they have somewhere, there are repair shops. They may be capable of repairing some things on the order of, like, strengthening the a little bit of armor, on the tank, change the tracks, maybe fix some electronics, but that's about it, So they do obviously this kind of cottage industry type drones when they don't receive them from NATO. And yeah, it's all their money laundering scheme. And yeah, Zelensky is coming up with all kinds of the crazy ideas. Sure, if Washington wants to continue to pay for his, and his cronies, villas somewhere and kill more people, sure. What can I say? I mean, it's a complete nut job, case in there, including on a strategic level. It's again, as I already stated, that the defeat and the demilitarization of NATO is so dramatic that the only thing they can do now is obviously produce mostly PR, mostly all those, hot air. And yeah, this will continue for a while, until Russians decide to finish it this way or another. But yeah, the situation is dire in Ukraine.
Yeah. And Bloomberg reported that NATO is not capable of providing Ukraine with weapons and aid for years. And in your opinion, if that's the case and NATO is not capable of doing that, why they're not just stop sending weapons to Ukraine and just go after some sort of other solutions for this conflict?
Look at the political elites in the West. From Washington, well, you have the guy who is definitely declining mentally completely, and is just basically, walking skeleton, if you wish, walking carcass, Mr. Biden and his administration. Jake Sullivan or Anthony Blinken or Mr. Obama, who is behind that, they have no clue. These are so-called political scientists and lawyers. They absolutely have no grasp of military. Evidently, no people in Pentagon have the grasp anymore, what real war is. They are absolutely shell-shocked there. And let alone we talk about European chihuahuas, they are nobodies, So in this case, as I already stated, they cannot accept it. They cannot go out and say, okay, let's settle, because for them, it's, as already have been stated very many times, on so many occasions, by Mr. Putin, Mr. Lavrov, Mr. Medvedev, Mr. Rybkov, Maria Zakharova, that, yeah, they want the strategic defeat of Russia. This was, confirmed by this amateur Stoltenberg, who is departing now from NATO, who is economist, by the way. And former prime minister of the country, which is the smaller than the size of one of the Moscow boroughs. I'm talking about Norway. So, and when you look at these people, they cannot accept this. They are petulant children with zero real life experiences. They are brought up within the confines of the utterly corrupt liberal arts, educational system in the United States and in the West, in Europe, So look at Boris Johnson. He has master's degree or whatever the hell he has from Oxford in classics. The guy's an utter moron, So look at them. So, and they only thing they know that if they go for any kind of settlement right now, it's over for them. And many of them may end up actually behind bars. So they kind of try to postpone this inevitable end, which actually already happened. And just as I already stated, we are in the arrangement phase of this whole special military operation, unless, of course, somebody goes completely bananas and starts nuclear war. But other than that, it's over. I mean, it's over for the West. I mean, they can probably, last for another few months, maybe. But inevitability of it is just so clear. It's, yeah, the guys, yeah, they screwed up. They destroyed the West.
Yeah. When you look at Orban right now, he went to Ukraine talking with Zelensky, offering a ceasefire. And right now he's talking with Putin, and he has talked with Putin that he was suggesting the same thing. And it doesn't seem that Ukraine just rejected his suggestions that they're not going to go along with any sort of ceasefire. And we know that the Russian side, they don't consider any sort of, Putin just reported, just alleged that they're not considering ceasefire without negotiations taking place. And this is important what he said. And how do you see this movement on the part of Orban? Do you think that he's doing this on his own, or NATO and the United States policy is sending him to Ukraine and Russia?
Orbán represents what you would term as the conservative part, so to speak, of the politicum of the combined West. And of course, he cares about Hungary. He is present on those deliberations among those nut jobs from European Union and the European Commission. Brussels is infested with the imbeciles. Okay, look at those, von der Leyen or Michel, whatever he is. The guy is complete idiot. They're cretins, basically. And he understands the level. So this is his last desperate attempt to basically prevent what is, again, I already stated, inevitable. And especially after many number of the movements from Russia, which haven't been reported, but the Russians now completely, it's over for any kind of the connection to to Western Europe. Hungary being the part of it, obviously, he understands that the country will be torn between the so-called European values, which are, of course, not values at all, and economic and geopolitical necessities, which for Hungary now lay in the Eurasia, and they lay with BRICS countries. No matter how you play it, Hungarians, it's actually a very good position to be in. So, and he said, hey, why don't I dare? If I succeed, I'm, the hero. If not, at least I tried, So, could he be also doing this on behalf of somebody else in, say, Washington? Well, it's certainly possible, but it's too little too late anyway, So, but at least he indicated his position. And that is important in the future, in probably nearest future, because Hungary will be facing the existential choice.
Yeah. In one of the things that he said in his meeting with Putin, he said that the conflict in Ukraine has begun to have an impact on the European economy and its capabilities. Beyond him, like right now in France, Le Pen, is she thinking the same way that one of the main goals of this conflict was to destroy the economy of Europe?
Well, she might think it, but she will do nothing against it. Nothing she can do that. And again, listen, I don't know why people get excited about all those elections. You basically it's reshuffling of one globalist, one sort of the globalist to the other sort of globalist. So Le Pen will do nothing. Neither will do France, as we know, it is over. I mean, I'm not even sure that in 20 years it will exist as a country because it is completely, I mean, how to put it politely, well, their native culture and native, I mean, values, they are gone primarily. So, and the same goes for UK and those policies, including those cultural enrichment policies, will continue. As per how war reflects on the economies, let me put it this way: yeah, the European economy is being destroyed right now, and some of it is irreversible. So, and it will be destroyed. That's why Orban is desperate also. And no matter what they do now, it's about 20 years too little too late, because now it is well-established fact that I gave the printout, so to speak, for 2023 energy prices. And if you look attentively, the highest energy prices in the world are in European Union. And this is just, I mean, horrendous. In this case, how much longer those industrial European economies will last? Well, another 5 years. Germany is, even Alistair Crook, he comes out and he says, when he talked to Judge Napolitano a few days ago, he says the standard of living is dropping like a stone. Europe will be poor, there's no doubt about it. So, and they wanted it, they voted for it for many decades now, and they didn't want Russia. Russia said, okay, there you go. And now it is clear when Mr. Novak, who is obviously a big honcho in terms of energy in Russia, says, yeah, those volumes which have been basically freed from Europe, but once their contracts are over, which I believe the latest they will be over 2027 or something like that, all those volumes will be redirected to Asia, with the new pipeline being already almost agreed upon, the Power of Siberia 2 between China and Russia. It was reported a few days ago. So there you go. So let Europe enjoy. What can I say?
Yeah. Do you think that this visit of Orban to Ukraine and Russia would help the process of negotiations, or at least would help these right-wing Europeans right now who are gaining the momentum in Europe to go after some sort of the same policy that Orban has right now?
I'm not sure about that. I know there is a complete wholesale rejection, I mean, huge rejection of the Berlin policies, for example, in Eastern Germany, which used to be obviously, GDR, German Democratic Republic. And those people there are more sensible, they are less brainwashed. Other than that, the most of Germany, they don't even understand what hit them. I am kind of sort of sorry for them, but then again, they wanted it. And when you look at France, you can discount France completely. It doesn't matter anymore what they really think. So same goes for United Kingdom. And whatever is going to change is not going to change the dynamics between Russia and the West, or whatever will be left from the West, because Russia is now decided what it's going to be doing, and it's not having normal relations with the West. Period. And simple as that. And that's why when Mr. Lavrov told the Liz Tracy, I believe the ambassador of the United States in Moscow, after this attack on the beach in Sevastopol, that he said, "We are not in the state of peace anymore." And there you go. The Russians, of course, will work with some people, some organizations in Europe who are not completely nut jobs, but Europe is lost. So, and whatever is happening right now, you cannot fix systemic crisis. We're looking at the systemic and existential crisis of the financial capitalism. And the capital, this banking capital, those finances, they are out to destroy, well, they are destroying the United States, but they will destroy Europe. In fact, it's in the progress, and it's far down the road now. I mean, you cannot reverse it.
How did you find the SCO summit in Kazakhstan, Astana? And in terms of what they're doing right now, in terms of security, in terms of economy?
Well, I mean, you would expect this, Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and it's a huge kind of chunk of the world economy and geopolitical power, obviously driven by China and Russia primarily. So it's okay. I mean, they're discussing things. They stated that for now, United Nations should be working as it was intended. Obviously, it will not, but the signs are there that essentially, which is SCO, is a kind of different iteration of BRICS, if you wish, just with a little bit of the security slant and things of this nature. All those organizations are coalescing in what probably will be the substitute for the United Nations, which is a completely corrupt organization. And so, but yeah, they need to do this lip service, that yeah, we need to use the charter. Fact is, who knows whatever gonna emerge eventually through BRICS and through the Global South. Will be sort of based on, at least in some large parts of the United Nations Charter. It's just not going to be done through United Nations anymore, which has to be completely dissolved. It's useless organization, and so there you go.
And what was so amazing about this summit that China and India decided to talk about their differences. This is the importance of this type of summits.
Oh, it's absolutely a major development. You can only applaud to it that Chinese being, of course, well, Indians too, being like grown-ups, adults in the room, so to speak. So that's good that they're going to sit and talk. This cannot continue for a simple reason that we look at the economic space of Eurasia, and obviously China and India are huge, hugely important for development of it. So when you look at it, yeah, it's totally normal that they want to settle. I mean, BRICS, SCO, all those organizations, all those initiatives, they have been created to create prosperity. They have been created to allow the trade, to allow the people getting wealthier, to lift a lot of population, huge parts of population from the poverty. So it's just why? I mean, obviously anybody and any political power, except for the Western political powers, because they are not normal people, any normal political power, let's be the Modi or obviously Xi and Putin or everything, they know the better their population lives, the more stable the political situation in the country is. So, and as a result, what is the how to do it? Unify this gigantic, gigantic economic space. So, and after that, you allow real flow of the goods, and those magnificent transportation, lines which are being built. So, yeah, and people will get wealthier. They will get, just get salaries, good salaries, better products, better what have you. So yeah, why not? That's improving of life of people, which is the social actually, and it is in many countries is the primary social goal. Sure, why not?
Yeah, here comes again the name of Turkey in the in this. It's so amazing. The question, Andre, is why does Turkey need to be part of NATO? It, everything, their domestic policy, their foreign policy, is much closer to the Russia, China, BRICS than to the United States and Europeans.
I don't know. Mr. Erdogan, obviously, he loves his multi-vector policies, and that means sitting pretty much on several chairs simultaneously. This is understandable. And hey, you know what? Give him a credit where the credit is due. He's trying his best, okay? So, yeah, Turkey definitely belongs economically to BRICS, pretty much, you know, to the Eurasian economic massive space. So, but it also partially European, so, and that also plays some role, especially with the urban population of Turkey, which much of which is, I don't know how much, but much of which is very pro-Western, you know. But when you look at the even by Turkish polling agencies, a couple of years ago, there was a poll in Turkey that 80 plus percent of Turkish population considers Russia a strategic ally. And there were numbers for the United States, they consider them the enemies. So for now, they will stay in this game because there are some perks also. And don't forget that there are some other things which obviously Erdogan has to decide for himself. But yeah, Turkey is, I don't know, it's going to be a process, but yeah, they want that, you know, they really do. So, but at the same time, they still see Europe as having some value and NATO having some value, so they will stay for now. And maybe when Russia will finally create conditions that NATO will finally disintegrate, which is it's on the way there already, then Turkey say, hey, you see, we did nothing wrong. You guys, you know, disintegrated yourself. So we're going to there, you know, and that's pretty much that's their strategy, I think. But again, I'm not a specialist in Turkey, so please don't quote me on that. It's my speculation.
Yeah. And the other thing out of this summit was they decided to gradually phase out the military presence of external powers in the Eurasian region. This is important, I think, for the security of all of the countries in that region.
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course, external, we understand United States and the
Yeah.
West. Well, militarily, as I already stated, Europe is inconsequential. They have no real forces. They have no United States consequential, but it is actually consequential only for the reason of being the nuclear superpower. Realistically, they have all those bases around there. They are sitting ducks. Okay, and we know that Russia already had it with the United States on this issue. And so you will see now the all kinds of different groups, such as Houthis, for example, okay, and others getting strangely suddenly being armed really well, you know, being able to inflict a lot of pain, you know. And the last thing, and again, despite the fact, you know, constant this chest thumping, United States is extremely, extremely sensitive to own losses. You know, it doesn't like to have losses on its personnel. That is why it's really good at covering up those losses and, you know, pretending them they are not even, you know, regulars and things like that. Here we have the mercenaries, military mercenaries, but yeah, they're expendables. They just, so nobody cares about how many of them killed. Well, for a while until they are killed in industrial quantities, and that's the whole thing, you know. So, and yeah, eventually it will be pushed out, and then again, when you look at the real economic situation in the United States is incapable to carry on. Basically, the military force United States can realistically afford, granted the corruption in the military industrial complex and the garbage primarily they produce, which is most expensive garbage in the world. So you would say probably one third of the forces which they have now would be around when they will be able to maintain them. And of course, gigantic for money are going to those bases. But you see, that's the whole point. This is how strategically inept they are in Pentagon. They think that having a base there somehow enforces or imposes the presence of the United States in the area. It was correct in 1990s. Today, it's so easy to find a group or two, get them some really nasty things, and guess what? Some of those bases are becoming what? Fat targets. People get killed and things of this nature. And suddenly, what is your base? It's a fat, prestigious target, period. Especially considering the level of the American air defense, which is pretty much, yeah, it's really not serious. So, and there you go.
Yeah.
That's how it's going to be done.
The other thing, Andre, they're recognizing in this summit, they're recognizing the importance of integrating the economy and social well-being into the Eurasian security framework. And it seems that they're moving toward a situation that we're gonna have some sort of BRICS army, SCO army, like UN army, just to keep the region safe for the sake of all the people who are living in that region. Do you think that we're going to that direction?
Yes, and it was already tried out on the what is called ODKB, Organization of the Common Security, by former Soviet states. If you remember 2021 and the events of the coup, essentially, inspired by the United States and Britain in Kazakhstan, it was joint force, actually. There were forces from Belarus. Obviously, Russians were the core, but there were forces from Belarus, even from Kyrgyzstan, for all things, So, and eventually, yes, you will get to this some kind of the joint force, supranational force, which will be, of course, assembled as needed, but it's going to be military force. Plus, you have now the situation, which, well, make no mistake, Russians are not against profits. Who said that Russians do not like getting richer? Russian weapon systems, they proved themselves unequivocally in the special military operation, especially issues of the air defense, air forces. So there is a line now, as the even people from Rostec, which is the gigantic, corporation, they said there are lines lining up people for Russian air defense systems, air combat aircraft, all kinds of things, tanks. So, yeah, it's and eventually it's going to be some kind of the joint force, and it's going to be trained as Russians and Chinese do for years now. They just do common, joint exercises. They blow things there, blow up things there, fly together. They even have the what are mixed units, to the point of mixed units. That means literally you have, let's say, a company. There will be two platoons from Russians and two platoons from Chinese. And they will be interacting using the same system of their, communications, radio communications, and computer, means and things of this nature. The Russians and Chinese were doing this for years now. So, yeah, there you go. It's coming one way or another. It's a brave new world.
And the other thing was to not interfere in internal affairs of any country, which is against the international law, by the way. But to the attitude of the United States has been for quite some time just interfering. We see the role of NGOs in doing
Yeah.
that.
NGOs are it's a classic American indirect strategies, because as I already stated, United States doesn't know how to fight the peer, let alone somebody who is better than peer, especially people with military history such as Russians, So what they do, yeah, NGOs, all kinds of the subversive activities and things of this nature, because they judge the world in a very perverted way. It's probably because of the extremely low cultural level of American elites. They are really uncultured people. So, and they don't know world outside, they don't understand how it operates. So, and as a system, this American and to a degree Western European system, they operate on this premises, but it's too late now. And of course, if you talk about non-interference, look at this, Taliban, okay? Taliban was actually on the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, okay? Then you have them, being Afghanistan being basically involved actively and getting involved and being, brought up by Russians, especially because they go out and it's in the air. Everybody understands that Taliban soon will be recognized as the legitimate government of Afghanistan. Russians tell Taliban, it's okay, but we don't like how you treat women. Okay, and your education and things like that. By the way, they changed their stance suddenly. Suddenly they say, hey, women can go and study until their sixth grade level. They have to be able to count, thing. Okay, then you already begin to feel that Russians kind of have, there's some impact. But they say, you are a legitimate government where Russians do help. They really do help Afghanistan. They provide some humanitarian aid. And they say, okay, we'll help you, whatever is necessary. But here are a little bit of conditions, but we understand it's your country. As long as you do not abuse so openly, women, yeah, your country, what can we say? Just go on, come on board now and we'll talk. We'll arrange something, how to do it, economically and things of this nature. So, and Afghanistan, of course, is an extremely rich country. It's extremely rich in minerals, but yeah, the way they're British and Americans were trying to do it, it's wrong. So, but now you talk to Taliban and you recognize them, and suddenly, hey, yeah, we're probably going to be ready to do some concessions. Okay, that's good. So you go in and develop, and the country begins to develop and things like that. And eventually, once there, how to say it, once there's some economic development begins to, appear here and there, and social order begins to change, well, guess what? Social and cultural practices inevitably will begin to change. So Russians understand that. Taliban probably understand this too. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Andrei, coming back to Europe and the changes in Europe, Zelensky is concerned about what's going on in the United Kingdom. Do you think that these concerns are legitimate or he's just exaggerating? Because we know that the Labour Party is not that different from the Sunak.
No, it's yeah, that I don't understand why people get so anxious. And you see all those politicians, shaking their hands in triumphant whatever declarations. It changes practically nothing. And Labour Party, what is Labour Party? It's a globalist. It's going to continue this immigration until there is no English people left. So, because this is their actually multicultural, that's what they are. So, well, yeah, just. Russians have the very good proverb, change shila na mila, which is basically changing nothing, So, and yeah, so I don't know why people get excited. Russophobia is endemic in British culture. And when you look at their whatever degenerate aristocratic class, you look at their royal family, you look at those people who are around it, you look at the people from Oxford who are being, graduated with all kind of the confabulated BS and history and classics and things like that. And they obviously considering their extreme butthurt from losing the empire, they still think that they are so great. So yeah, they just hate Russians. I mean, it's just totally normal in British culture, so especially upper echelon, so to speak. So yeah, they are that kind of people. You cannot talk to them. It doesn't matter who, Labour, Reform, whoever. I mean, show me any, except for George Galloway, of course. But again, he is an exception. He's a profound and beautiful exception. But then again, he's only one man. Maybe there are two or three like him. The rest of it, you saw yourself. It's just, they're going to kill the country anyway.
The other thing that Zelensky was talking about was Trump, and if he wins that, we're going to be in trouble. And even Putin was talking about Trump, that he said he's talking about these things, but he didn't offer anything so far. And can we understand this? What's the point of Donald Trump on this issue in Ukraine?
Well, don't forget he was the guy who actually accelerated the training of the Ukrainian forces. It was on his watch when the really large volumes of the weapons and armor started to arrive there. He appointed the supervisor, so to speak, Mr. Volker, to the position of the well, supervisor, basically, of this whole Ukrainian project. And Volker is the outright Russophobe. So and things like that. So yeah, Trump. And again, it was on Trump's watch due to either his cowardice or just combination of stupidity and cowardice. When actually, Russia and United States lowered their diplomatic relations to the lowest level ever. And the only thing now which is left is the Russian embassy in Washington, D.C. Period. It used to be we have the consulates. You could. So that was on Trump's watch. So the guy and Putin stated that Trump loves to talk. He is a narcissist. He loves to portray himself as the omnipotent, while in reality he is primarily impotent. And the question is that he says that Putin stated today that he sincerely believes that he can stop the war. I don't think so. So and Russians like do it tongue in cheek, like yeah, sure, yeah. Again, what's going to change? Nothing. Nothing. And now when he stated that, oh yeah, my national security team from the last term is going to, okay. So there you go, same old, then nothing is gonna change.
And the other thing that Putin said, they're not recognizing Zelensky as the legitimate president of Ukraine. That's why they're not negotiate with Zelensky. And he said that no mediators gonna be capable of doing anything between Russia and Ukraine. These are two important points. And when you look at the his mindset, I'm talking about Putin's mindset right now. And the other thing that he said that the final agreement would be between Ukraine and Russia. The signatories would be Russia and Ukraine, not anybody else. But how we can reach to that point in your opinion? And what would be the negotiation? It would be a negotiation between Russia and the United States or NATO, and then these two countries gonna sign the agreement.
Yeah, it will be between Russia and the United States. Europeans are irrelevant here. Nobody trusts them. Russians also don't trust Americans at all. America is both ungovernable and non-agreement capable, but it can convince those people to do as Russia says. United States knows the conditions. Nobody cares if they want or do not want to accept them, because reality is the thing which is like, it's a really nasty thing. It, wins always. So it's now to convincing the United States that it's no, it's not that they know they lost. It's just telling them how much more pain do they want to endure. Because essentially, as you absolutely correctly stated, it begins to affect America economically. They didn't report it directly, but 3 days ago at the European Convention of the Central Bankers, Mr. Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Fed, he stated, we cannot print anymore. We cannot do this anymore. We cannot continue with the debt because it's gonna kill us. They want to continue with the this debt. You have to understand. You say, oh yeah, American, like the number of the of value of all those things are in trillions. No, it's all fake money. They do not exist physically. It's all the zeros into some computer. In reality, American economy is dramatically smaller than it is being reported. And secondly, that is why actual money in the United States already blew out more than $300 billion on Ukraine alone. And those are real money. You have to buy with them something, provide, things like that. These are not zeros in some Wall Street computer. And then suddenly, hundreds of billions of dollars for the United States is absolutely, it cannot continue to support it this way because it kills its own economy. Forget about much smaller economies of in Europe. And then suddenly you grow your debt with much more accelerated way. And it's already listen, everybody understands it that United States will not be capable to pay it back, period. The only thing which is in the future of the United States is to reconstitute the dollar and forgive the debt to everybody who holds their treasuries and say, you know, go and kill yourself. And so they will have to reconstitute the dollar because it is already toxic currency, but it will be, I mean, it will be toxic, okay? It's whatever the lowest rating of it's going to be junk currency, but they will have to do it if they want to maintain the country, which is, by the way, the other thing altogether. How do they understand this in Congress? Some do. So, and whatever happens, well, if they want to accelerate this, you know, hitting not just bottom, but crushing the country itself, they will can continue to, you know, support Ukraine. Russians are ready. They can go again, do it for years and years. United States doesn't have years. It probably has months before it can do something. So yeah, there you go. And that's how the negotiations will be, that at some point of time, those people will come. By the time they will come, all those Blinkens or whatever, whatever the hell their powers that be in Washington, they come and they will be told what to do. And then they will go and order Ukraine to do what Russia told them to do. This is how negotiations will continue. And many people in Washington, not all, but many, begin to sense it, at least. Others begin to understand, and the catastrophe they look into face. And this is simple as that. But I'm a record. They should have studied real history and real economy, not to speak about real warfare. They don't.
They're saying that the Russian oil industry will become fully independent of foreign equipment by 2027. I think
Yeah,
it's
I
so
mean,
important, Andre, because this is the
yeah.
way that they destroyed Iran. The Iranian economy was destroyed by this type of policy, by sanction on the oil industry in Iran. And the way that Russia is managing this situation is just amazing.
Let me put it this way. Most of the American students, not all, but most from the high school, they will not pass any kind of the entrance exam in any Russian engineering school because they will not have the volume of the physics, mathematics, and chemistry which is required to enter this. So, and the idea that the country which produces the new most sophisticated nuclear power submarines and fly to space cannot develop their oil processing and oil extracting equipment is downright stupid, because it is obviously concluded by people who graduated whatever the Harvard and Yale with degrees in economy. That means they have no education. And for example, Russians already produce the full range of the chemical required for the shale oil extraction, including for the equipment for the shale oil extraction, all of it Russian. But again, you cannot explain to the graduate of the Ivy League school or the Oxford in Great Britain what Russian economy is. They have no reference point, they don't have framework, they don't have knowledge, and that is why they project themselves, and then they recognize that they're dealing with their economic monster, which I warned for 10 years now, you know. But yeah, now they saw it, and this is just a part of it. So yeah, it's Siemens learned it a very hard way a few years back when Russians say, okay, you don't want to help, oh, bye-bye. Russians produce their own gas turbines, and you know, so yeah, it's just like that, you know. They really miscalculated, and this is miscalculation on the level of Hitler, who stated in June of 2000, or I mean 1941, that, you know, we just need to kick in the door and it'll fly off the hinges. Well, boy, he was wrong, you know. So there you go. It's repetition, but this time it's over for the combined West.
Andre, how do you see the situation right now in the Middle East? Israel is talking about that they're going to attack Hezbollah. They have been fighting Hamas, but it wasn't that successful so far. And right now they want to attack Hezbollah. Israel attacking Hezbollah, and nobody's helping any side, not United States nor Iran, helping any of them. Is Israel capable of de defeating Hezbollah?
Israel cannot defeat Hamas without, so let alone Hezbollah. And my gosh, I mean, if they want to hear, to feel a real pain, forget about what they experienced through Gaza. And again, they hide their casualties tremendously. But I mean, Israel economy will be completely ruined. The country will dissolve probably. No, they cannot defeat Hezbollah. In fact, is the casualties they will be sustaining, they will be order of magnitude more than what they experienced in Gaza. And Israeli generals don't like what they experienced in Gaza. You know, and the only thing they can do, the Israel can do, is the only advantage they have is their air force, because they can theoretically bomb people. That's very much American approach. You know, other than that, on the ground, they're not that good of an army, really. Russians just, recently, General Polikovsky. He's retired now, he's a pretty old man, but he's very clear-minded and makes beautiful comments. He and again, he said this whole myth of IDF has been blown away. I mean, it says second-tier armed forces with some middle-of-the-road capabilities. And yeah, without United States, they are incapable of fighting any serious war. And Arabs sense that. And Hezbollah obviously knows this, and they have enough in their stock and in their personnel to maul Israeli Defense Force.
So strange to see that Israel is trying to kill these commanders, Iranian commanders, is Hezbollah commanders, just killing people instead of, if you want to fight, you can fight, but these are terrorist acts.
Yeah, they are. And this is how America fights too, you know. So this is pretty much it's all they have been grown, they are joined at the hip, US Army and IDF, there are a number of the US military personnel of Jewish origin, obviously. Some of them may be, I don't know, fanatical, rapture type Old Testament nut jobs fighting in Israel, for Israel. So yeah, that's the only way they can do it. I mean, listen, the whole thing is based around one single premise. We have air dominance, we fly in, we bomb the hell out of the place. Who cares how many civilians, whoever we kill, the army moves up, mops up. Wow, this is incredible strategy. Obviously, neither United States nor Israel, they have an understanding of the modern combined arms warfare. They don't know how to fight it properly with the enemy, which actually shoots back and shoots back well. So, and they just kind of experienced it. So let them try Hezbollah. I mean, Hezbollah indeed can turn, especially north of Israel, from what I hear. Evidently, my gosh, they can wipe their pretty much northern Israel off the map, you know. So, and what can I say? They wanted it. So now they have to live with that.